Well, good afternoon, listeners. Thanks for joining us for another episode of This Anthropological Life. As always, this is Adam Gamwell.
And this is Anil Tripathi.
This is Amy Hing.
And this is Ryan Collins.
We are joined in studio today by a very special guest. Today's episode, we're kind of talking about humans as a playful species and the ideas of pop culture and games and sports and sort of how we play around with ideas and get to know our world. And so today we're very thrilled to be joined by the creator, host, writer, extraordinaire of Old School Game Show, Michael D'Angelo. Mike, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, guys.
Yeah.
Great to be here.
Good to have you on board. So I want to sort of have a conversation today with Mike sort of about the world of play and games. And as I said, so he sort of has set up this really cool visual theatrical alt trivia pub night play, all sorts of, you know, whatever kind of fun adjective you can think of, right, of this game show that sort of harkens back to the era of, you know, 1960s and 70s game show trivia, kind of like Family Feud and all sorts of inappropriate 1960s game show male hosts. And so anyway, I mean, so I thought it'd be kind of fun to kick off the conversation to think a little about, you want to tell us a little about what Old School Game Show is, and we can sort of jump into there and kind of roll it out.
Sure, yeah. So Old School Game Show is an alt trivia variety show. And yeah, it's a mix of a kind of Price is Right style game show and a variety, bless you, and a variety sketch comedy. We have a live band. We also have our cubic zirconia dancers in the show. So it's an interactive variety spectacular and, you know, ridiculous fun. But yeah, when you come to the game show, you get a name tag, just like the Price is Right. Mm-hmm. And if you want to, you get the option of putting your name on a card into our official Old School Game Show fishbowl and being picked at random to come up and play the game. And we do our own quirky pop culture based game categories that we play, and we give out real prizes in the show from local sponsors, amazing local sponsors, and yeah, and then we have our own, you know, kind of weird sitcom kind of storylines that happen throughout the show, but it's all structured around the games that we play, the, you know, the game show.
And do you have patrons come with a dress code in mind to create the aesthetic?
You know, we have lots of times we've done lots of theme episodes. So you know, we did an action spectacular, the Get to the Chopper Panty Dropper episode. We did our February slow jam jubilee, all about, you know, the slow jams and whatnot. And so our last season one finale episode was the John Hughes-a-palooza, which was our celebration of the great work of John Hughes and high school movies. And we had our own 80s prom celebration after the show. So we had Lost Times Love contest, so we, in the Halloween show, costume contest for people come in, we give them prizes for the best. So we have the prom king and queen for the best dressed 80s prom patrons. So yeah, people, that's, we're always very excited when people get into the spirit and get dressed up and bring it, because that's so much of the show. It becomes, you know, we do a ton of work writing with the stories, with the games, but then there's so much improv that happens when you get the people up there, we interact with them, the getting the answers correct, getting them wrong, just, you know, and so it kind of just goes off and we riff off of that. So the audience is a big part of the show too, which is awesome.
Yeah. Very cool. It's one of the things, I mean, I'm curious to think about, because one of the sort of theories with play, right, just thinking about play today, sort of games, is that something that play helps humans do is sort of learn the social rules of the world. And like how we adapt and work together to make a sort of a social group, right?
Yeah.
So I'm curious, when I think about kind of the role of that, I mean, and anybody else, feel free to jump in. Like, do we think about play as a way that helps us adapt to our, and like learn our social rules? Because particularly, as you said, like there's a lot of improv that happens, even though the show is also written, it's choreographed, there's dances, there's specific songs written, right? But at the same time, there's this element of improv that comes with it too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how do you feel about that? That sounds like a really like important element of the show, right?
It goes hand in hand with that structure, and then you totally need to establish that and make people feel like, okay, I get this, I kind of see the framework, and then if you're gonna, because we do, right from the, so, you know, start messing with that, but we want people to come, you know, be following and be like excited and come with us. So a lot of that's a very important element is a lot of them it's the trope. So people, okay, it's a game show. I get this. It's a pride. Okay, we come down. We sit here, coming to for the first time. We get our name tags. There's the announcer right there. He's doing the intro, so we're kind of familiar with the structure. And then we, you know, we have our set rules for bringing people up, and then just the things that we've done to kind of establish and make people feel okay. We have, you know, you get called. You come to a specific. We have our little corrals there So it's not like, okay, I'm just going to be standing there. I'm going to do it with my hands. Like, you have, like, you know, this spot. Yeah, which is a big, it's a small thing,
right?
But
yeah,
it's a big deal because you're like, oh, well, I'm just going to have to be, you know. So, like, the, you know, thinking of, you know, having every step of the way kind of set up for people to, because, you know, I think people want to come and have fun, but there's, you know, like, okay, what, how do I do this? So allowing people.
That's really fascinating, right? You know, in anthropology, we have a lot of writing from Marcel Mauss, who has this idea of, you know, the anthropology of the body and how culture influences certain mannerisms, right? So you're basically finding that you want to give people roles so that they know what to do with their bodies, right? To figure out how to act socially in this sphere while also allowing this improvisation to occur.
Yeah, I mean, it's because, you know, there's that mix of, like, being in the audience and then coming up and you're part of the show, but having it be a very communal thing. So having it, you know, dealing with that, oh, this pressure. That's something I do right from the get-go, is I make myself the biggest buffoon and fool that there is. So I, you know, and I want to create a very positive and, you know, very, you know, open atmosphere up there where I'm not going to be making fun of people. Or if I am, it's we're playing, and you know, it's not making people look bad. It's we're all kind of, you know, in on the, you know, the fun when someone gets the wrong answer. You know, it's just it's because in the show, my theory, anyways, it's not, you know, we work very hard and we present these things, but it's not really about getting the answer right in the show. I mean, I think people want to win, but it's a whole experience because if 160 people come to the show, 30 of them are going to get up and get a chance to play, but all the other people that are there, you know, we need to entertain them, and they want to be involved. And so it's really, you know, just having as much fun and as much entertainment as we can get from the answer. So they almost, how we structure the games is it's almost like jokes potential, or kind of, you know, entertaining little riffs as we present them so that people can be a part of them.
Can you talk a little bit about what play means to you?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I, performing in theater, I, you know, very much, you know, mix the two are very integrated. For me, there's a very real and rewarding part about playing a character. Kind of having, and I guess it's when you have a character, there's kind of like some rules that, like, getting back to play too, that you kind of adhere to, like a simplification of what, you know, what this person is, and it allows, you know, for me anyway, like I have my character on the show, it allows me to really kind of immerse myself in it, and kind of by simplifying, you know, go to places that I wouldn't normally go just in, you know, in the everyday world, but are, you know, because of whether it's, you know, being polite or being, you know, cancer or space, respecting people's space, but just, you know, like it kind of allows me to, to go to these interesting places that I would, you know, kind of, oh, no, be editing and kind of analyzing otherwise.
So it sounds like structure is coming up with play in terms of you playing a character, or at the game show, you have to set up structure for people to be able to play, which seems antithetical to one another.
Yeah. I mean, I think even when you mess with it, like, because that's you kind of set up the rules, and then you kind of, even if you tweak it, or it's a controlled chaos.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think if you know, that's always important in comedy or in gameplay, because if you totally throw that out, then it's, you know.
It's almost similar to jazz in a way, right? Where you
have
structure and you need to learn the theory. You need to know how to play your saxophone or the piano.
Yeah.
But then you create this improvisation as a group.
Yeah.
Right? And that seems to be so much of it on the game show as well, right? The fact that you have so many people coming from these various backgrounds who get together.
Yeah.
And it creates this social dynamic to, you know, it produces play and it produces a space where people can be creative.
Totally. No, totally agree. And that's how I do, you know, a ton of preparation, and I'm kind of, you know, preparing the games, preparing the bits, or, you know, reading the trivia and thinking of different ideas. And then when I get to the moment, lots of times I put that aside, and maybe some of that will inform and come, but you know, it's then you're focused, you're in the moment when you're doing it, you've kind of, you know, prepared and you're, you know, then you're ready to go.
So it's almost like, yeah, it's like you do so much prep work to get the structure enough in place, even in jazz trade, you know your scales, but then when you're actually playing, it's like you just bounce between them, you know, yeah. Freeform. It makes me think too. One of the things that Peter Gray, a psychologist, talks about. He's forming what he calls a ludic theory of human nature. Ludic just is Latin for playfulness. Okay. So it's like a theory of how play makes us human.
Yeah.
And one of the things that he talks about that strikes me about the show is one of the main things that he describes play as is a biological thing that humans do. But part of it is that he sees it as non-competitive. And again, we can question what we think about that. Is play competitive or not? Right? What if it is or if it isn't? But one of the ways that we biologically respond through play is by sort of downplaying aggression. And one of the ways we do that is through humor. Right? And so one of the things that humans use is we tell jokes. We make situations that may be tense or in this way competitive, right? Even in trivia context, but you make them funny.
Yeah.
That sort of diffuses that. I mean, so humor is a major role or major player in the old school game show. So what do you think about? So how does humor come into sort of how we think about play in that way?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think that with the, so if it's the competitiveness and the, and then that, that idea that I'm speaking of people, because that's a lot of times people come to the show, the first time they come, they don't put their name in to play because like, I don't know what I'm stepping in here. It's, you know, what I'm potentially stepping into, so I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to watch. And then when I talk to them after the show, like, oh my God, I wish I'm totally doing it the next time. Now I know. I guess it's, if it's anxiety or whatever, you know, like how you allows you to, through humor, kind of deflating that and making people feel comfortable
Well, it's almost like, because, like, you know, raising your hand in class can be kind of intimidating. And this is a similar-ish kind of thing. You know, it's a different kind of class, but, you know, same idea, right?
We're doing the back-to-school special, so we're going to have a lot of that, you know, stuff going on, a lot of tropes. So, yeah, it's very similar.
It's interesting, though, right? Because in a way, the play is diffusing the tension and this kind of buildup, but then you need that tension to create the play, right? So you're almost kind of following this kind of this dialectic. I mean, similarly, thinking about competition, right, and having a game show, you're creating this, you know, you want people to compete, but then they're competing as a group, you know, as you were saying. When you look at these questions, right, you want to look at how everyone can get the most entertainment out of the question.
Brian Masumi in Affect Theorist just came out with What Animals Teach Us About Politics. It just came out this month. And he actually works to disrupt human exceptionalism and think about the political animal and include humans in that. And the access that he uses to set us up alongside non-human animals is play and how across all species there's generally some kinds of play. And he opens up with this great sort of meditation on what makes play not the reality. So it has to look like the reality. And he talks about like wolf cubs fighting or something, play fighting. And it has to look exactly like the reality so we all know what we're doing. But there are structure and there are these limits, and that when one of those is violated, it can very quickly turn into what it is supposed to be mimicking. So it's interesting that you brought up humor, Adam. And so that sounds like, in this context with the game show, we look like we are making fun of you, but there is this thing we all tacitly agree upon is there, and that is what separates the jest or the jab from, you know, an actual jab.
Totally. And that's in performance too, that you get, you know, that the collective. That's a big part too, which is a great part of being a performer, is you get the collective audience. People come in, they feel the mood in the room, and then when you're performing, you know, the reaction, you know, feeling that and, you know, and working
there has to be. If not, there wouldn't be any. It's interesting.
You know, this concept really it drives home cross-culturally into the past as well. If you think about the ancient Maya, they had their ball game, but they had different ways of doing the ball game. One way that was competitive, but other ways that were mimicking the stories that were sacred to them in their Popol Vuh, sometimes called the Maya Bible, and where you have people dressing up like deities, and sometimes, you know, doing very badly on purpose, just to make jokes about how they're playing the game bad, mimicking what it actually is as a performance. It pulls everyone together in that way.
Can you think of moments when it's gone wrong? like
it's
we're something.
Old.
Yeah,
I mean, that's part. I think that's
out what
sure. That's
on.
That's part of the preparing because
mm-hmm.
that's going to happen. And then I think the lots of times those things become very memorable moments in the show and great moments in the show when these mistakes happen. And then if you're just willing to go with them and address them and be honest with the audience
mm-hmm.
and you know, whether it's, you know, it's comment, this kind of, okay, here's the show, this something's going horribly wrong directly, doing it or making a joke about it,
mm-hmm.
that, you know,
mm-hmm.
there it kind of removes the, okay, the smoke and mirrors kind of thing that's happening,
mm-hmm.
and it's, you're kind of all experiencing this, you know, together.
So you're moving in and out of the sort of shared
sure.
lie or joke
mm-hmm.
or scenario
yeah.
we've all agreed upon.
Yeah. And that's for me as my, you know, because I'm, there's so many levels of that because it's a fake
mm-hmm.
game show. You know, and I have my character, who so it's this kind of a Richard Dawson-based kind of lech character, but with like a heart of gold. So he's, you know, has a very, you know, TV personality, kind of phony, but then there's all, you know, this stuff that will come bleed through of, you know, so you know, the different layers of it, letting people know, you know.
How in it are you in terms of your character? Like from when you show up for that show that night?
Yeah.
What is your...
I do, well, I try to stay in it, but I... With the improving, and you know, there's definitely a lot of me seeps through, and I try to, you know, to try to make walk that tightrope
mm-hmm.
of being this kind of this outdated kind of talking head kind of self obsessed character, and then also making people want to relate to him. So if even this thing that I'm projecting, but then he's actually a good guy too, and so you kind of see that he's kind of, you know, a fool putting it out. Yeah,
I think that makes me think of too, Ryan, you mentioned in terms of the Maya ball game, right, that in some ways the game would symbolize some deeper cosmological significance there, right? In a nice parallel, right? Sometimes OSGS or Old School Game Show seems to draw a lot on pop culture, right? A lot of references to films, music.
Exactly.
I mean, there's some great categories of your games, which is like Shut the Front Door,
yeah.
Which is a category of game that you bleep out certain words and certain bad words in a movie phrase, right?
Sure. Well, so it's the edited, something that it's still around, like on the, but for edited for TV movies. So growing up, so watching, not having cable, they would dub over, cuss words, and then so, but you'd create these weird things that no one would ever say, this gobbledygook, and then so it's very, it can change the story as a kid because they'll, like, what is, you know, people will have kind of mild, if not silly, conversations, and then someone will react crazy violent, you know, for no reason. So it's kind of, it's a strange thing. And then, so I've always been a fan of those, and like, and my friends and I would, you know, kind of pass them and use them because they're ridiculous. And but then in the game, that's one thing we do. Because so we put it as here's the original, you know, like Yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Falcon from Die Hard 2. And then that's an example right there because it's like who, you know, it's a critical point in the movie.
Right.
He's lighting the airplane on fire, and then he talks about this guy Mr. Falcon who they're not referenced in the movie at all until this point. It's very strange. So it kind of, you know,
yeah.
It really changes the subtext of the movie,
I
think.
It's a curious thing, yeah.
Yeah, so, but that, and so people buzz in, and then we claim the real line. And so that's a game. So there's a lot of games, I mean, all the stuff is, you know, because I'm a film, music, and TV obsessed guy, and have been my whole life. So that's the bread and butter of the category, of the content, of the stuff that we're
mm-hmm.
doing.
So I'm curious with that because that's great to think about. I mean, I can attest this Mike D'Angelo is in fact a movie buff,
yeah.
Music buff. He schooled me in a Harrison Ford naming what films are Harrison Ford in.
Oh yeah, we played fun. That was a
good
party
game.
We played at a barbecue. That's another kind of this whole the old school game show kind of developed from
that kind of thing.
From
yeah.
car games, like just kind of home games that you come up with, and that was one of them where it's a game we do where we pick an actor and then we have to kind of like go back and forth until someone you can't name a movie that they've been in. And it's kind of like a very short course. You get a letter. We call it Flicks.
It's like the best
short, you know, because people don't want to play really long games.
That's true. too much time.
And if you don't get it, you get a letter.
You get a letter.
Kind of thing.
But so that these kind of things, they make me think of this sort of deeper issue that, you know, to actually tie it back to the Maya ball game. I swear there's a point that I'm making with this long story. is that it's this question that pop culture in some ways for a lot of people, these young people, especially in the United States and in the Western world these days, use pop culture as this, it dictates sort of how we think about things. It's the references through which we can communicate with each other, right?
Yeah.
It's centering. It's a way for everybody to come together and relate. So
yeah.
That's kind of our version of how these old stories may have played out in similar ways.
Yeah, so it's one of the questions, like, how do we think about pop culture? Because obviously, Old School Game Show is very much, you know, centered around this sort of cosmology of pop culture, right?
Yeah.
And that's it's great because that's like the corpus of knowledge. It's like the biblical text that is Old School Game Show in some ways.
Yeah, you get the, you know, I'm going to try to, you know, bring out the impressive analytical stuff. Let me see if I can do it. The Joseph Cornell stuff, right? With like the Star Wars. This is really the Star Wars. That's the reason I know it. Not Campbell.
Joseph Campbell?
Got
it. Boom.
Man. He's the artist corner, right? Anyways, let me try to get back on. Campbell, where he, you know, the Star Wars and George Lucas based so much of that stuff on the
mythology?
The mythology, these characters that keep showing up in religions and stories.
The Heroes of a Thousand Faces.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, now the things that we're observing, we have these parables, these stories that we can relate to, and, you know, and instantly, lots of times in humor, you put out a reference and someone, you have a shorthand, you've cut immediately to just by saying, you know, just like Harrison Ford or, you know, just, you know, just like Han Solo, bang, they get that. And it's a, you know, that's a, yeah.
It's almost a verbal art, right? And
yeah.
Where you're able to say multiple things in the same moment.
Yeah.
And kind of create this space. Mm.
When you mentioned that pop culture was like our cosmology, I thought, oh my God, I'm sad. But it made me think too of Benedict Anderson, the moment that we start to organize humans into larger groups where we're no longer congealed by, you know, certain cosmologies, certain, you know, religious precepts and things like that, that what we share would be these popular references. Because you can't create this game show, you know, and make fun of different religious precepts without it just being about that, right? Without it, like if it's a quote-unquote old Jewish game show, right? Like, you need people with a certain level of understanding and sort of cultural insider identity to be able to make fun of something like that. And so I guess this would be what we would... It's like in kind of a less sad way, I guess.
Yeah.
There's a reason why we only share these things in a space like
right.
this.
But tonight, I mean, I don't know... I mean, I guess if it's sad pop culture, what if it's good pop culture? I don't think it's sad. Well, because I could look at, you know, something, and this can get into a religious aspect, but if you don't necessarily believe in the actual existence of certain deities, but you still read the stories and say, this is a great story, and it has, and I relate with it, and it's moving, and the lessons that it can teach, I can totally identify with. I could do the same thing with, say, if it's Star Wars or something like that.
Or comic books.
Or a comic book or a piece of, you know, so that, you know, that's, I think, an easy transition, is that I've learned and something that's very powerful from it or that connected with it. Mm-hmm. And so I can reference it, you know, in the same, maybe not, you know, obviously what's the word, making an extreme example of it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you can have these things and even not going... Even if you want to not have it be such a literal thing with stories, even music or some of these different types of things that you can, if it's instrumental music, something that you can listen to and you can really feel, someone else can. And it's, you know, and that, you know, can be, you know, whether it's probably sacred, it's just powerful because you're actually, you know.
Yeah.
And it seems with you, you actually get a lot of freedom through engaging with pop culture, right? The idea that you have the freedom to make it be what you want it to be, to be malleable with the stories. And Joseph Campbell, right, so much of what his writing is about is trying to get personal freedom through mythology, to see how people, you know, in the modern age can engage with mythological texts in a way that's empowering.
Yeah.
So the idea, I think, that we can do that with pop culture is incredibly powerful.
Right. And this really reminds me of the way that Shakespeare's plays would work, because he would be addressing multiple audiences in London of different social classes through... dialogues, it would be pop culture references for them, that each of them would get jokes on different levels.
Sure, yeah.
So you have some jokes that would, you know, go to the lower classes that would be jabbing at, you know, the aristocracy, and other jokes would be jabbing at the lower classes the aristocracy would get. Yeah. And that dialogue would be going in two levels at once.
Do the same thing with, you know, because I have to be careful the amount of references. I don't want to go too old school, you know, like do the same thing. Too many Three's Company references in the show. I'm going to lose a lot of people. But I could sneak in a couple there. But, you know, yeah.
Yeah, it's the,
You go
ahead. What's your main demographic?
That's a good question. So I think right now it is, let's say, mid-20s to mid-30s, I would say, is probably our core group. And, you know, we're still growing the show. So the show, this is the second season. So we had 10 episodes last year. And so it started off, you know, friends and social circles, and then we built it. And then we've, a lot of our audience has come from the local music, local performance, local burlesque scenes of different entertainers who are big entertainment and pop culture kind of nerds too. And so that's, they've really kind of been, you know, kind of built the audience and the word has spread and, you know, but yeah, there's a wide range of people. That's, I mean, we've had, one of my favorite contestants was a woman named Ginger, who was 73 or 74. That's the Halloween special.
Oh, yeah,
she was proud.
I remember Ginger. Yeah, she was a
crowd. She was very sassy. She got on there. And that's something about that game show that I loved about game shows, because I would watch them, you know, it's with my grandmother, or I would, you know, you'd have all these such a widespread, you know, like a group of people there, you know, that you'd see come up and, you know, have these different exchanges. And so it's, yeah. So that, I mean, that we try to make the show, and that's the art of kind of doing it, like how, you know, for people that are really into, like uber into pop culture, you know, we want to give them some stuff, but we don't want to, we want everyone who comes in, the people that, you know, just even kind of have a, you know, just an in-depth understanding of certain, just to be entertained and you know, with it too. So it's kind of that balance.
What were your favorite shows when you were little?
So I would watch a lot of those game shows. I'd watch soap operas. I literally would watch everything. You know, and then I'd watch, but a lot of that daytime stuff. Like, because, so I'd even watch, like, you know, Phil Donahue's and, like, really just going around before cartoons would come on. And, like, you know, my own time. But, I would watch everything. I was kind of, you know, I would not go to summer camp. I would, you know, I'd watch it during the day, and then I'd watch Nick at Night.
I would love to poll, like, 20-something to 30-somethings, and how many of us...
Let's do a TAL poll at a game show, you know.
I think we should.
Who watches what? We're inventing something here.
Family Feud with your grandma.
Right, Price is Right. I even remember watching The Price is Right when Drew Carey took over years later, like watching the host shift, and actually the demographic of who watches that show, too. A lot more college students are now on the show itself.
Well, they,
it's 20-something, right?
Yeah.
It's been interesting to watch that, because you're right too. Even that's the show that I watch more so as a kid, and I remember seeing such a wide generation of people, which is really cool. You know, you got grandmas and grandpas as well as you know, quite young kids. You know, on there just going and getting up there to play because it's fun. You know,
and that's something we're watching like that. The I draw in the show too a parallel between and The Price is Right, I think, is an example where people will come up and lose their minds. And it becomes like or it's an Elvis thing or something, like, where it's kind of, you know.
An ecstatic experience.
So we do that a lot in the show. It's kind of the deification of, you know, the game show gods. It's kind of like our own church, because people get up and they go crazy, you know, for winning prizes and for being, you know, and people...
Yeah, you know, it's so crazy you'd say that, because I've just been thinking this. That, you know, your character kind of sounds like the priest of pop culture.
We've gone into that where, you know, that's a riff. So he, you know, he has a whole backstory that we kind of put in there, and where he's a, you know, a carny. And so kind of that, those games, that kind of that culture is part of his, goes into the game show stuff, and a salesman. And he started his own cult. He has a, you know, he also has. His assistants in the show, we have a loving, open relationship, a polygamous relationship. So, and we kind of have our own, we don't call it a cult, but it's, you know, it's a based on, it's a religion. It's a river that, based on the teachings of Prince. So we try to spread that message too. And yeah, so it's a little bit of a cult figure there. underground. It's in an underground layer too.
Makes sense.
The David Square Theater is in the basement.
So this is a really interesting thing too, right? To think about the location where you're doing this, right?
Yeah.
In David Square, and also how you were talking about earlier with Amy's question, but looking at the demographics, right?
Yeah.
Who are all the people who brought you your audience? And to think, I mean, earlier we were talking about the structure of the show itself, right? But there's also the structure around the creation of the show that fed it to its being. Right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's as we've started, you know, the show originally just started as a, it was a house party. It was my girlfriend's birthday, I guess, like 5 years ago now. And she invited her friends over and said, hey, I want to have some type of a game night. You do something. So I want you to plan it. So, and I had, you know, I've always kind of been a fan of inventing car games or little silly games for us to play. So a lot of those I took, and those were the basis. And then I wore a fake mustache, and I gave everybody name tags, and we actually called it. We came up with the name that night, the Old School Game Show, and people really liked it. And then so when my birthday came around, we did it again. And then I have a lot of musician friends who were at that one, and they were like, hey, we should totally do this. You know, we could go at a rock club, and we can be your band, and then you can do it, and it would be a lot of fun. So we did that, and that's. We did a Kickstarter campaign for that one, and that was the first show last May at the Milky Way, small room at the Milky Way in JP. And then we just got in and found a bigger space and just kept going. But as I've done it, more, you know, people, so it started off my friends and my girlfriend. She was one of the original assistants. Like, I'm like, yeah, come in. And then she, you know, soon a few episodes and she was like, well, there are other people who are interested in doing it. I'm going to step back. But I've met people that have come to the show that are other, you know, the director of the show, Brandon Boogie, he came to the show and he afterwards said, hey, I'd like to, you know, theater guy and I really like this. And so people that have come to it have gotten involved. And so now we actually have a writing team. We have a production team. So it's pretty awesome. But just the people that, you know, that are amazing people that have now become, you know, good friends with, just meeting them through the show.
It's very cool. That makes me think. I mean, one of the speaking of like the structure around the show and the show itself, like that. One of the theories that Gregory Bateson, when he talks about again play and part of being human, is this dichotomy between work and leisure. And leisure is these kind of activities that we do just for its own sake. And work is, of course, these focused activities, right? But
sure.
So something like the game shows we talked about before earlier in the show, the mixture of improv as well as like the structure of how to act. Even thinking about just the production of the show itself, as you said, you've got a team of writers now, and of course, I mean, there's choreographed dances, bands are writing songs. I mean, like there's prizes to get from sponsors, et cetera. Like, how do you see as like the mix between, like, for you, what is the sort of the mix between leisure and work in this sort of thing? And is it all play? When does it become play to you?
See, that's it. I mean, if I can make it, mix it over and what's, it doesn't matter anymore. Like, I, you know, cause for me, just personally, I don't do well with leisure time. I kind of need to, you know, even if it's a competitive thing, I need to have, like, all right, if I'm on vacation, here's what I'm going to, Space Mountain, then I'm going to this, then I'm, like, I approach my, you know, play like work because I'm excited and I just, you know, that's how I run best. So the game show is having something just to really throw myself into is great for me because I'm always, there's always a million things to do and it's exciting. And then you know, that's when the ideas come too, when you're, you know, kind of, you know, working on something else and kind of relax a little bit, you get a good idea. If you're not sweating, if you're just sitting there, lots of leisure thinking, what is a great idea? It's not going to happen.
It's true.
So yeah, just keep moving.
Actually, as a friend of mine, she used to say that, you always have your best ideas when you're washing the dishes or taking a shower or something because your monkey brain's occupied. That's what she called it. You know, like your motor cortex is doing something. Then you're suddenly a little bit more freed up to think of these sort of creative things. You know,
I agree. I mean, that's what in comedy and in creative thinking, I really agree with people have said that the funny stuff, the good stuff, especially in improv, is the stuff where the when you get to that place where it's like the weird subconscious thing that you're kind of making sense of right now. There's something very magical and funny about that if you can get to that place.
Yeah, because it reminds me of questions of filters, right, or social filters. As we said before, it's where do the filters come on and off? And that's sort of what play is about in some ways, right? It's playing with with this notion of reality, because I mean, the subconscious is where, like, there's not as many rules of what you think, you know. And your more conscious brain's like, okay, I should or shouldn't say that. As mm-hmm. you find your character in the show is sort of like, what should I not say in real life, but I'd say here,
yeah.
You know.
Have you ever crossed the line with your character and been like, oh, I don't know about that?
I don't know.
Good question.
That is a good question. You know, it's not that I can think of. I mean, Matt's, I'm always trying to present, but, you know, I with myself kind of here. And so that's, you know, that's something that I read very much. Like, I'm not a fan of, like, an insult comedy or, you know, making people look bad or making them feel uncomfortable. So that, I try to read that. Very, you know, right for when they come up, and I, you know, if I give them a little bit of the Richard Dawson charm, and they're like, no, I'm not feeling it. And I just, like, you know, I don't make a beat. I just, you know, so just kind of reading them and having them, yeah.
So what sort of the another big part? This is hard to talk about on a radio show, but there's a very big visual aesthetic to the show.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, and the stuff. I mean, like even the old school game show website describes it. Come touch our shag carpet podiums you stand on, and like, and there's this element of again, it's like 60s and 70s. You know, you always have costumes, but the dancers have costumes, the bands have costumes. Like there's a huge visual production part, and you yourself come from a visual background, like your visual art.
I do, yeah.
How did that sort of filter into you, like the image that we see that is all OSG? It's like, how'd you find yourself in that sort of image?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been a fan of, you know, kind of retro and old school antiquated kind of styles ever since I was a kid. Like, you know, just being fascinated by them. So, I'm very kind of obsessive about recreating and what feels right and kind of the belief in making things, setting a stage that you're walking that line. Yes, we know this is a fake, this is not the 1970s and this character is not real, but you emotionally, if it's play, you totally buy into it. So that's, and doing the sets, the, you know, the costumes, yes, these are 1970s solid gold style dancers. As soon as the announcer comes on, oh my God, that guy has an amazing
golden pipes.
Old school the golden pipes, the sexy voice of old school game show.
Yeah.
and then you're like, wow, we're totally in a game show. And then, you know, people, you become invested in that. Otherwise, I don't think it works. If you don't start, you establish that world and then you can mess with it. And, you know.
I think with this, it's funny, right? Because you're creating this old school environment, right? But in a way, the old school creates a newness.
Yeah.
Like, this is a new environment for going back into the old school, right? To this 70s, 60s environment.
Yeah.
And it creates the potential for this creativity, right? To try out new personas and whatnot.
Cool. Yeah.
Aside from entertainment, what do you think this brings to people who come?
I think there's definitely a communal that's a big part of it. So people, because, you know, that, you know, even within the game itself, the people that come up there, you know, because they're drawn individually at random, and then we have two teams, so kind of like a family team. So they're kind of like their little families now, and you see it as their team, you know, if their team wins a round, they're high-fiving each other and really getting into it. So they're kind of, you know, building this relationship now, the blue team identity that's happening, so the people coming together and having a fun kind of being able to be involved with this controlled chaos, kind of ruckus atmosphere
That reminds me of that's what Victor Turner talks about with liminality, right? And he's talking about sort of initiates that are going through rites of passage. Mm-hmm. But in some ways, if you think about being on the blue or red team on old school game shows, kind of like going into this rite of passage. And what happens in the liminal states that he talks about is that he goes into the neophytes, or these would be the contestants that come up on stage. Then they know there's a set of rules, but they don't know what they are. They recognize the visual cues. So this looks kind of like the 60s and 70s game show, but how am I supposed to act? We're kind of thinking about it. And then on top of that, like, you're supposed to implicitly follow the rules of whoever's in charge, which would be yourself. So you have a lot of power here, you know. But it's this interesting point of, like, the experience of being the contestant, and then, like, what am I supposed to do? How do I act? And, like, thankfully, hopefully there's some cues there, right, which you certainly have. You know?
We get the buzzer podium there. So, yeah. There's, you know, these kind of iconic things that people, you know, have a – yeah. And then I helpfully and guide them through this
Indeed,
stuff,
yeah.
but in a, you know, in a irreverent way.
What are you thinking of the difference between for adults and children and how leisure seems to be like the adult category for play. And but we are talking about play, and it's something I think that, I don't know, in common parlance, play for adults isn't often used unless you're like part of a community that values the word and tries to facilitate it.
Yeah.
And so you were doing so much work, it sounds like, even in the moment with individuals to assess what's happening, how to bring them in, how far you can bring them in, where the lines are, all in this effort to get people to play somehow, like, and to stretch their boundaries as far as they will let you. And so I guess asking you what you think this brings, of course, community, but I'm thinking to anyone who does, I'm sure people leave having felt like they played a little bit, or what that does for people who let themselves go in it as far as they go.
Yeah, there's certainly, I mean, experienced the show a couple of times, like, it's certainly there's this, like, you know, Durkheim would call collective effervescence, right? There's this, like, bubbliness in the crowd itself, that there's, like, this joy of being in this, or communitas is what Victor Turner calls it too, like this space of, like, that we, there's a joy that's built together by being in this space, right? And it's, again, I think bubbliness is a nice phrase. It's like, you know, we're all kind of carbonated.
We create, there's something kind of that alive, you know, the whole, hopefully, and that's the, you know, this spirit that we're all, part of.
Well, in two, play is supposed to be unbounded and unscripted and all these things, but you're also, I think, engendering trust in people in the moment that you won't make a fool of them on stage, like beyond what they're willing to do.
Sure, yeah.
And so it's, I don't know, just this hour we've talked about all these things about how structure, trust, like, you know, all these things have to happen for play to occur with, clearly it does for children too, you know, if you think about children and safety and their emotional development stuff, but for adults, a lot is happening to get this group of adults to play.
Yeah.
And it has to happen. And I, you know, and that's, and showbiz, there, you know, there's different, you know, I think ours is much more interactive because people are coming down, they're right a part of the show. But when you're performing, ideally, even if it's just one person on a stage, and you want it to be interactive, you know, So you have to establish that safety, that trust, like the first 30 seconds or a minute when you hit the stage. How do you, you know,
that's the art. Are you nervous when you walk out?
I'm excited. I am nervous. That I feed, like, that's, I'll always, you know, like, that nervous energy, that's, I always feel and kind of use.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, that's, you know, you don't know. You come out there and then it's, you know, literally it's them laughing. It's, okay, this is, you know, then we're good. Now we can relax and we will go, you know. But you have to, you know, you gotta, that trust that you gotta establish right from the beginning, or else it's gonna be a long and
day.
I've had shows like that where you come out, because as anyone has experience as a performer or an audience member, you come out and the room is gonna have a different temperature, different level of, you know, expressiveness, and they can still be into it, but not, you know, just being not expressive people. And so that's something that I enjoy in different forms. I mean, it's great coming out, and people right from the beginning are like, our last show, I think, was one of our best audiences.
Yeah.
They were like, as soon as we came out there, they were ready to, you know, it's prom. They're ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really just, you know, we just kept soaring right from the beginning. But I've had shows where I come out and people are like, I don't, you know, it's like a ton of new faces. I'm like, I have no idea what this thing is. And then so you will, you know, I'll be performing, and then they'll just be like, you know, be slightly confused or not, don't act. And then that's a very satisfying joy, is like, as I go working them and getting the note, you know, because there's almost a relish that maybe I shouldn't experience.
Well, you know.
But there's almost a part of me that in those experiences that when I enjoy when I'm doing something crazy bizarre and people are like, what is happening? I even turn it up even more because I'm like, this is very funny to me too. And then, thankfully, they came in this instance, they enjoyed it as well, I think. But
you get them on board, it's super satisfying. Yeah.
It seems you really have to, you know, you put in a lot of work to get them to work also, to get them engaged and to start thinking about the whole process themselves as well.
Amazing stuff. Well, it's been an incredible 45 minutes, good hour, you know. Thank you, Mike, so much for joining us and talking to us about Old School Game Show.
This was so much fun, yes.
Yeah. And we have Mike D'Angelo. He's the writer, co-host, the co-writer, host, extraordinaire, choreographer, Choreographer, is that a word, choreographer?
I do a little bit. I'm more of a storyographer. Maria and Raquel are the head choreographers of the Cubic Zirconia dancers.
Oh, excellent.
I get a move or two in there, though. But, yeah. That's
an important thing.
So how can we go to the next one? Where do we get tickets?
Yeah.
Thank you. Great. So the next episode, our Season 2 Electric Boogaloo premiere, is happening Saturday night, September 27th, 9:30 p.m. at the Davis Square Theater in Davis Square, Somerville. You can go to our Facebook page, or you can go to oldschoolgameshow.com, our Facebook page for the event. There's a whole bunch. So we're actually having a celebration Season 1 premiere after party. It makes it even more special if it already wasn't. Where it's a after-school, old-school game show, after-school a-go-go live dance party event with our live house band. We have amazing local rock vocalists, Ruby Rose Fox, David Santos from Eddie Japan, and great local burlesque dancers are all going to be performing routines together in a crazy dance party celebration to kick off the season. So come on down. It's the... this episode, of course, is our can I cuss? I'm not sure on this.
I wouldn't recommend it.
Because the title of the show does have a cuss in it, so I won't do it. But it's our back to school. I can?
Well, yeah, we'll
I don't
it.
Want it. No, okay, all right. Well, so this episode, of course, is the batshit crazy back to school bonanza.
Bonanza.
You're going to want to come. It's school themed with lots of after school, very special moments and PSAs and things like that. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Do we go by the theater to buy the ticket ahead of time? I know it can sell out.
I would recommend getting them so we have links to brown paper tickets and getting them in advance because it has, and I think that this one is going to sell out. So, yeah, so get those tickets. And it's cheaper if you get them ahead of time. They will be available at the door, but there's no guarantee that they will still be available.
Very good. Awesome. Thank you so much, Mike, for joining us. Old School Game Show. We're excited to see the episode come up on September 27th. It's been a pleasurable conversation.
Awesome.
As always, this is Adam Gamwell.
This is Neil Tripathi.
This is Amy Haynes.
And this is Ryan Collins.
And thanks for joining us on This Anthropological Life. We'll see you guys next time for another wonderful episode. Some more play.
Have a good week, guys.
Bye-bye.